This is an ABC podcast.
The Bucket List.
Well, for us, it's all about Australian music and the music of Australian composers. So each year we get new music from Australian composers from all over the country, some established composers as well as emerging composers, and we put it together and we work on it, we record it, and we sing it in concerts all over the place.
So, Gordon, what would you say is the state of choral music in Australia at the moment? I mean, what aren't we seeing if we're not involved in that area?
Oh, it's amazing. It's such a pleasure to be involved in choral singing in Australia. There's a huge movement, actually, of community choral singing in this country. Many choirs. I'm sure people listening know somebody who sings in a choir, or maybe they even do sing in a choir. And what I've been really impressed with in the last several decades, I guess, is that even at the community level, the amount of Australian music and commissioning of Australian composers has really taken off. And so I think that's a really special contribution that a composer can make to the cultural life of a country, to compose music not just for the concert hall, but for everyone at every level. People, I'm sure, are aware of or experience, when you sing, it's just so fun. You're with other people that you know and you like, and you sing and you make a noise, and then, you know, this beautiful sound happens, and sometimes it feels like you're doing it all yourself. You know, you sing your part. There are 20 people around you singing your part, but it feels like it's all coming out of your mouth. Such a fun feeling.
Good. What would you say when, you know, you are looking at those groups that are out there? I mean, there's obviously varying levels, those that are quite professional, that perform in Stedfords regularly, to those who, like you say, are just getting together because they like singing in a group and it's fun.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a full spectrum of levels, which is gorgeous. And it's such a pleasure for me and for us in the choir to encounter groups of all levels, from beginners all the way through to professional, semi-professional, and, you know, engage with them at whatever level they're at, and to, you know, bring out the joy of music making. For example, last week we were in Bernicuee in southern New South Wales on the coast, beautiful little fishing town, and there we met the Bega Youth Choir, which were a wonderful little choir of school students. Together we put together three new pieces by the composer Lisa Young, and we did it at the Amphitheatre at Four Winds Festival. And so this was just such a special experience, I think, for them and for us to engage and to meet people that, who knows if we'd have the opportunity to meet them and make music with them were it not for our choirs. So there's also that aspect of the choirs just have this nice mechanism where they meet, they come together, and you can sing something together and put it together rather easily, and it's really fun for everyone.
Gordon, are you a singer?
Yeah, I guess I am. I didn't train as a singer, but I sang in choirs all through my youth and into my career, and it's sort of become a practical thing that I do all the time. And, I've had a few lessons and sort of tried to sort out my technique a bit. So I do sing sometimes in the group. Normally the group is about 24 singers, but occasionally we do concerts and tours with just 6 or 8 singers, and so in those cases I often sing as one of the group, which is a different experience, one I really like.
And what is it like when you're on the other side and maybe it might be singing one of your own compositions or it might be singing someone else's?
It's a bit different because when I conduct, I don't have to sing. I just have to listen and conduct and think about guiding the music. Then it's possible or easier in that case to hear and to listen and to judge what I'm hearing. But when I sing in the group, it's quite hard to listen. And so there's less that a conductor kind of can influence when they're singing in the group, and you just kind of have to let it happen and lead subtly from the side, which is what I do. So, in fact, it's actually quite a good feeling just singing in the group on the side and directing subtly, but kind of just letting go and letting it happen, and everybody has to take responsibility for making the music happen. So when I'm not conducting, there's more responsibility and influence from individual singers. So it's more like chamber music, like you're playing in a string quartet or a band, indeed. Whereas when I'm conducting the full group, it's more like an orchestra where there's more influence that the conductor can have.
I'm Rhianna Patrick. This is ABC Radio. And my guest is Gordon Hamilton, the artistic director of the Australian Voices and also a conductor and composer. Now, Gordon, you create some pretty unique work. What is your process when composing new work?
That's quite a question, Rhianna. I am a composer, and I compose for voices as well as for orchestra. It all starts with some exciting idea, something that excites me, that's in my head. Maybe I'm at the piano and I find a few chords or a melody that just tickles me and I find interesting, and I want to compose something based on that. And then it often goes hand in hand with an opportunity. For example, my choir, the Australian Voices, might need a new piece that I'm composing, or if I'm writing for an orchestra, they might have a particular concert or event that they want it to be for. And then usually an idea, there's lots of them bubbling around in my head, just presents itself and says, pick me. And so then I start to develop that idea. And but once I'm composing, it's really hard work. It's just a lot of hours spent developing an idea, composing, arranging, especially if it's for many instruments, for example, an orchestra, which you might have about anything from 12 to 25 separate lines of music that you have to compose. It becomes quite technical, and composing can become more about solving the technical problems than about inspiration, which I don't mind because they're fun problems to solve usually. You know, for example, if I've got a choir of a group of six voices, but I really want to write a seven-note chord, an interesting technical problem to solve, and it can be done. And it can be done by, in that case, the lowest note or the person singing bass. Their overtone series of notes that is contained inside the note they sing is a known set of notes, of frequencies. And so the first two harmonics, they're called harmonics, those first two harmonics can be considered to be part of the chord anyway. So in that case, I would leave out those harmonics in the written notes above and kind of hear it anyway. In that way, you can get more notes in the chord than there are people playing. Sorry if that was super nerdy, but
but I like that because it shows, I guess, the complexity of composing and the things that you have to think about as a composer, particularly the differences between composing for voice and composing for instruments.
Yeah. Oh, there's so many things. You know, one of the most interesting things about composing for orchestra, and this explains so much about orchestras. When if people are wondering why orchestras are the way they are, why someone has to stand out the front waving a wand, each individual player only has their own part written out in front of them. So the third trombonist has their third trombone part in front of them. They don't know what the first violins are doing. They don't know what the violas are doing. They only have their own part. And so they might have 300 bars of rest, and then they have to play one note. And so their part does not indicate the shape of the music. And it can be really stressful and difficult for them to count those 3,000 bars of rest. And so therefore, having a conductor at the front marking the beat and showing the shape of the music is essential in a big orchestra. Whereas in a choir, it's traditional to print out the full score for everybody to have. So you can see all the voices, and you know, by looking at the score, you know what you're participating in before it happens. And so the conductor has a different role then. It's not so much about marking time. It's about shaping the music then. So it's, yeah, really, really interesting. You know, composing and conducting is mostly problem solving.
And I'm assuming, Gordon, that when you are conducting, you're the person also giving the heads up to that trombonist that he's going to be coming in soon.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. That person is feeling slightly nervous about playing that loud note after half an hour of not playing. And so you want to give that person a bit of a look and then bring them in just to know that, let them know that, yes.
The time has come.
Yes, time has come. Don't be afraid. Yeah. I have played in orchestras as a pianist, but I think it's amazing what they do, players in orchestras, in a professional orchestra, day in, day out, encountering music that they've never seen before and which they might not know and might not care about, and they'll never play again. And then they have to give it everything and count those rests, play it really well. It's an amazing job and attitude that orchestral musicians have to have.
So, Gordon, why did you want to create a piece around the mathematician Alan Turing, whose work is probably best known from him breaking the Enigma code?
Yeah, that's right. Well, he's an absolute legend. And, of course, he was in a recent film, The Imitation Game, with Benedict Cumberbatch. And I think he's just becoming known now generally as a war hero and as a mathematician. He cracked the Enigma code, his bomb machine, one of the first computers. And I've known about him for quite a few years, and I became very interested in him. And I found a letter where he was expressing great worry that his life's work on the computer would be overshadowed by the fact that he was prosecuted for having a relationship, a consensual relationship with a man. Those days were illegal and criminal proceedings that could happen. And so I set part of this letter to music as though they are lyrics. And he says, at the end of this letter, he says, Turing believes machines think. Turing lies with men. Therefore, machines do not think. So he's written it out like it's mathematical proof, a logical proof, which I think gives some insight into his personality. But it's also really heartbreaking, I think, to think about how a person might feel. So I set these three lines of text to music in this choral piece that we're going to sing upcoming concerts in regional New South Wales, and tried to make a piece that sounds a little bit like a computer or a machine. It's repetitive, it's a bit mechanical, but at the same time, there's, I think, great feeling in this piece, and anguish and beauty, which is my attempt to get inside his head, to imagine what Alan Turing was feeling at the end of his life.
What do you like about creating works like this piece where you've taken something from a letter? But, you know, what is it about voice that lends itself to, as you say, being able to be that conduit for the way that you wanted it to sound a little bit mechanical and a little bit, you know, like it was a computer, but it's obviously taken from his writings? What is it about voice that lends itself to the way that you created this work, and what do you love about working with voice?
When you have voices singing something, it takes that text out of its everyday, banal context and can make it really intensely charged with emotion. So it's really interesting. I think when you can take ordinary text that is spoken, and as soon as it's sung, it takes on all of this extra colour and extra power. And I'm thinking of a particular example a few years ago when the composer Rob Davidson composed some music for us based on Australian political speeches. And in this music, he would have the speech playing on a speaker, and he notated exactly the rhythm and pitch that the politicians were speaking at. And so we were able to sing that line with them, and then he wrote other lines around it that harmonised and made it sound like music. And it's really interesting that then it sounded like the politician was singing. And we did have a really good spread across the political spectrum. We try not to be too political, but one of the examples was Julia Gillard's misogyny speech. And so it turned Julia Gillard from not just somebody speaking into somebody singing, almost like an opera. And these lines that she speaks took on this kind of operatic grandeur. And so that's what kind of happened when you work with the voice. And we also did speeches by Tony Abbott and Mendes, many others.
But there is, speech patterns are quite musical, aren't they?
Oh, they are.
And they're very unique to each person as well.
They
so
are.
That's quite interesting. If you break that down and you put that to notes, it's a completely different understanding of the way that we talk, that there is musical elements in how we speak.
Absolutely, it's incredible. So Julia Gillard, for example, speaks in D-flat major. She alternates between D-flat major and B-flat major. And so she stays in D-flat major while she's on one fourth, and then she changes thought and changes key, right? And you know how people repeat themselves? If you say the same word or the same phrase again a few sentences later, it's amazing how people use the same notes. They use the same pitch, as if they remembered that motif, as if that motif needs to always be on the same pitch with the same rhythm. And when you see it written out in a score, it's amazing. It's just music, you know. It's like it was composed really well. But in fact, humans just do this. It's just the way we communicate. We sing to each other. We don't just project words at each other. It's all singing. It's got rhythm. It's got pitch. Dynamics. It all means something.
This is ABC Radio. I'm Rhianna Patrick, and Gordon Hamilton is my guest. He's the Artistic Director of the Australian Voices and also a conductor and composer. Gordon, you also created a piece which was just specifically for YouTube a few years ago. Why did you create something like that?
No, I find YouTube and the internet really interesting. It's amazing, I think, how you can reach people all over the world that would never, ever have the opportunity to meet you or hear you or interact with you in person. So I actually created several pieces like this. One piece was in 2011 where I took all the top 40 songs from that year and made a kind of mashup, but I kept them in the original keys and tempos, which made them really kind of clash. And to be able to do this, I had to keep it on click track and then jumble it all together in software afterwards. And so that piece really can't be done live. And another piece was we were on a tour for regional Queensland. I got the audiences in each location to make a sound and to sing for us. And I videoed that and then stitched it all together into a composition where all of regional Queensland was singing together on YouTube. So, yeah, I particularly like to think that if I'm going to make a piece for something, for example, YouTube, I want to write something that can only be done for that medium. And so that there's a meeting of form and content.
Gordon, you mentioned that the Australian Voices are on a regional tour of New South Wales. You've got workshops that you're also delivering as part of that. But I wanted to know about the importance of Australian Voices delivering work to regional Australia, but also providing workshops to community vocal groups in those towns and what it means for you to be able to do that kind of work.
Yeah, well, I just love meeting people. And so being able to go to regional centres and give a workshop and meet singers and conductors on a personal level is just a beautiful thing that I enjoy. And choirs grow, I think. All choirs, including mine, we grow when we meet another choir or another conductor who brings their ideas. You know, we've often worked with the Queensland Symphony Orchestra and worked with different conductors with our choir, and they all bring their own ideas. They bring things that are important to them that they emphasise, and you can learn a lot from that by watching them work and having them conduct you. And so that's something we also do when we tour. Most of our concerts have a workshop attached to it whenever possible, because we like to meet the people. And to be honest, whenever I go to a concert anywhere in the world, I sort of think, I wish I'd been at the last rehearsal just to meet the musicians and watch how people work and experience it from a different angle with a different emphasis. And so that's what we're kind of doing. I'm just doing what I would like to experience as a concert goer.
Gordon, you mentioned before meeting choirs like the Bega Youth Choir, and I was wondering, what are some of the stories that you have of some of those people that you've worked with in the past in seeing them grow and also venture out into the world? I mean, have you come across any choirs or even people in workshops that have turned up who you've then met further down the track?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. So sometimes we meet people that end up auditioning for the Australian Voices and becoming part of our choir. And just last week in Bega, we met an amazing young fellow called Oscar, 14-year-old composer, and he asked for a composition lesson. So I gave him a composition lesson. And he has since, just yesterday, sent me a new choral piece, which I'm going to play through today when I get to the piano. And I'll maybe even be able to sing it, this piece. And also, this was in Burnaguirre, New South Wales, a gorgeous place. So we met Oscar, and he was really interested in looking at orchestral scores. So one of our singers, Isabella Gerometta, is her name. She sat with Oscar for more than an hour, I think, showing him the score to The Rite of Spring by Stravinsky, a great orchestral score that she had ready to go, and he was able to print that out. And so now he's on this project with this score. The next few months he's going to analyze it. So we had this wonderful experience with the Bega Youth Choir and Oscar. We really connected in a meaningful way. And when we sang together with their choir, they were able to teach us a song. So they taught us all the parts. We put it together rather fast. And then we did it in the concert together, the Bega Youth Choir and the Australian Voices, which was kind of cool. You know, it wasn't just one way of us telling them what to do. It was an exchange.
So the next generation of Australian composers sitting there in Bega.
That's right. Well, here's the thing, man. You never know who you're talking to. Everywhere you go, there could be some young person who is going to be a composer or a conductor or something else. And, you know, whatever level they're at, encouragement is, it can just be the thing that they need at that time. And people remember what you say to them. You know, it can be for a teacher or a professional at the top of their game, they might just say some throwaway comment. But other people listen to that and they take that with them. And so I think one should try to be a force for good in those situations. And people are at all sorts of different levels and go going through all sorts of different things and have their dreams. And if you are able to help a young person or, you know, say something encouraging, that can have enormous effect down the road in time.
This is Rhianna Patrick on ABC Radio.